Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
All right. Yes.
Come on.
I'm here. I've got my shoes and my glasses so that I have them.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and shoot you some info.
Yes. Sure.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Anything else?
I don't know. You say 3587?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I know. 888. How did that guy get in here anyway? Put him back out of the studio.
Get out of here.
888-914.
Yeah, Saul.
There was an on-air light on outside. He didn't read it. Give him a cup of coffee, though. He's a nice guy. 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. This is also hour two, so we're moving quickly. And if you want to call, I would suggest calling now. We have three lines open. That is amazing to me. Three lines open. They won't last long. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Andrew now in Salt Lake City. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning.
You were talking about the definition of a woman earlier and how 50 Democratic senators didn't seem to be able to wrap their minds around it. And I would be curious to know if you would approve of my definition, which is someone with two X chromosomes.
Yeah, that's certainly a distinctive. That's for sure.
I mean, you were saying how the, you know, I don't remember now who you said it, but I'm not a biologist, so I can't tell you. Well, anybody pretty much who had high school science class, high school biology knows women have two X chromosomes, men have an X and a Y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are other things. Women have fallopian tubes. Women have mammary glands. Women have a uterus. I mean, there are the XX chromosome is certainly one of the markers, but there are many such markers physiologically. So yeah, I mean, I would readily accept that definition.
I guess the thing that frustrates me a little bit is it seems like the same people who we constantly hear follow the science from don't seem terribly interested in following the science on this one.
That mantra of follow the science is only useful, and it's really only applied when it serves them, and typically for a political purpose like you know, bludgeoning people into submission on things like masks and
you do not know
social
what
distancing
you are talking
and things
about.
Like that. I do. Boy, do I. He got in here, too. How did he get in here?
Just as an aside, just this morning I watched an interview of a swimmer from University of Kentucky who tied with Leah, I forget her last name, the one from University of Penn.
Yeah. His last name.
And they, and they tied in the race. It was legitimately like a split down to the split second tie. And when the female went to the podium to line up to get her trophy, she was told that they would mail her trophy and that Leah would be standing on the podium. And this
not surprised.
Gal was needless to say, wet madder than a wet hen. I mean, she said, "I am a biological female, and you are making me a second class to somebody who last year swam as a man." And they didn't. Yeah. She said that they wouldn't give her a reason. They wouldn't discuss it. It was just shut up, sit down, and we'll mail you your trophy.
Yeah,
and you know. I mean, what was Title IX supposed to be doing for the last, 50 years?
Well, here's the thing about Title IX. They being the government, was done under Obama, but it's been reiterated under President Biden. And that is, they have redefined the meaning of sex, and they've very explicitly outlined that sex does not mean anymore, anyway, male or female, which is, of course, the classic definition of it in context. Now, the meaning of the word sex in Title IX documents is, it includes gender orientation and all of those things. And so it's now it's malleable, it's plastic. It can be made to mean anything or nothing. And that's exactly what's going on here. So talk about a massive change in just in terms of the understanding of the word. That's what's being done. And it's being done on purpose so that they can propel this forward. One wonders what the end game is here. And I have a feeling I know what it is. I've said this before, and I'm not the only one saying this. I've heard other people say the same thing, but I do concur. I think that there are two tracks running parallel here. One, with regard to people buying into this notion that you can be whatever you want to be. If you're biologically male or female, you can be anything else that you want. That is leading in the direction of transhumanism. And transhumanism is already here. It's not as though it's something down the road. It's already here, the merger of technology with biology, so that you don't even necessarily have to be human anymore. You can be a cyborg or something like that. Now, to what extent that ever actually comes to pass, we will find out. But I think the ideological drive is, this is not the terminus point. Transgender is a stop along the way. It's just one of the stops along the way. The terminus point, I think, is a full-blown transhumanism, and to prepare people to be thinking about themselves as, I can be anything. I don't even have to be human. So the furry nonsense, as an example of that, people who actually pretend that they're animals. It's a derangement syndrome. I don't know if it's a true mental illness, but whatever it is, it's an example of people who really and truly want to live as an animal instead of as a human being. Now, the second parallel track, it seems to me, and Andrew, thank you for your phone call. I appreciate your insightful words. The second track is, and this has to do more with the sexual component of these ideologies, is to eliminate as many as possible or even all barriers for adults to have sexual interaction with children, to lower the age of consent or eliminate it altogether. And that's a pedophile's paradise. And we know, because we can see on TikTok, that there are people in the classroom who are ostensibly teachers for whom this is their life project. They desperately want to be able to sexualize the children. They want to talk about this. They want to indoctrinate them. And if you look, you don't have to look far, but if you do a little Googling, you'll find out how often in the classrooms these children are preyed upon by their teachers sexually. So I think that's the parallel track. The one is moving toward transhumanism. The second one is moving to eliminate, if possible, altogether any barriers of any kind to prevent adults from interacting sexually with children. So there you have it. That's my theory. And I hope I'm wrong. Believe me, I'll throw a big party if it turns out that I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. Let's go to Peter in Oberlin, Ohio. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Patrick. I had a question about the mass. In the first parish I went to, at least in my childhood, what we would do after we received the Eucharist, we'd go back to our pew, and then we kneel and we pray. But the parish I'm attending now, after we received the Eucharist, they continue to stand up after they return to their pew and then wait for the priest to sit down and then sit down. And I was wondering if there was like a certain protocol that we should follow during the Mass in terms of what we do after we receive the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kneeling. In the United States, or even in North America, the custom is to kneel. To kneel during that time. Now, the kneeling usually starts with the holy, 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 the Sanctus, and then we kneel through the Eucharistic prayer. We stand for the Our Father, after the Agnus Dei, the Lamb of God. Then we kneel again, and then we go up to receive Holy Communion, and then remain kneeling. Typically, the custom is, out of respect, that the congregation remains kneeling until the priest sits down or resumes concluding the Mass. That's the custom of longstanding in North America, and certainly in the United States. Now, you may be wondering, where did this oddball change come from? Well, it came from came out of California is where it came from. And several decades ago, there was some, I would argue, very faulty and badly done liturgical theology in a document that was issued that said that the people were to stand. In essence, it forbade kneeling and emphasized the importance of standing. And it was very disruptive, and it among other things, I think it contributed rather quickly to a diminution of people's respect and reverence for the Holy Eucharist. You could see it, almost a cause and effect. If you could graph it out, you could see over time that there was, it certainly looked to me like there was a correlation between that implementation and people's decline in their reverence for the Holy Eucharist. Now, there were other factors at work, but that certainly was one of them, if you ask me. Thankfully, that did not spread. It wasn't contagious, and it didn't go to many other places, although it did here and there. But by and large, for the most part, the churches, the dioceses, the parishes in this country have remained consistent with the custom of kneeling during this time. So if you're asking me what my opinion is let's do what we have done, because there's a very good reason for that. And kneeling is certainly, in this context, I would argue, more conducive to prayer. It's more conducive to showing reverence for Jesus. It's a sign of humility. There are liturgical reasons for standing. And I know, and if you're, not you, Peter, but all those people who are feverishly dialing the phones right now to call me and tell me, but in the Eastern churches, they stand. They don't kneel in the Eastern. I know that. But we're not in the Eastern churches right now. This is the Latin Rite Catholic Church. And just as the Eastern churches have venerable customs, and one of their venerable customs is that they don't kneel after Holy Communion, they stand. I understand that, and we respect that, but you have to respect the Latin Rite tradition. Even if you don't practice it, you have to respect the Latin Rite tradition of kneeling during this time. This is our tradition, and it should be respected. So don't start in, not you, Peter, but don't text me or Twitter me about the Orthodox Church doesn't stand, etc. Because I already know that, and I know the reasons why. But in short form, I would say those are my thoughts on that issue. It's unfortunate. I examined the document closely when it first came out. I was sorry to see it happen. I'm hopeful that in due time that will be reversed, because I think it's very disruptive and very divisive. And one reason that it's divisive is because somebody from Southern California goes to Arizona or any other part of the country, and that person is thinking, well, we're supposed to stand, everybody else is kneeling. I've even seen this, Peter, and I'll leave it at this because I don't want to be, you know, on my soapbox too long, but I remember being at a men's conference in Phoenix, and I was one of the speakers. It was a great conference, and during Mass with the bishop, there were, I don't know how many men in this gigantic auditorium, maybe 2,000 men, at least 1,000, 1,500 of them. And when it came time for kneeling after the holy, 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 everybody in the room knelt. Everybody did, except for like three guys, and they were scattered around different places in the auditorium. It wasn't like they were there together. And in the sea of humanity, everyone kneeling in preparation for the consecration, these three men remained standing. And it was probably more than three, but it was a small number. And it was so jarring that you couldn't help but notice, like, well, we're supposed to kneel now. Why aren't you kneeling? And if I had to guess, I would guess it was because they came from Southern California, where they were told, you have to stand. You can't kneel. And maybe they felt funny about it, or they felt ill at ease. I don't know. But boy, was it divisive, and boy, was it disruptive.
It wasn't bad backs.
Because
bad
wasn't
knees.
Bad backs. No. Bad and bad knees. Because you know what, Cyrus? If you have bad knees, you sit down.
Yeah.
It's easier on your knees if you're sitting than if you're standing, right?
Yeah, that's a fact.
Am I right or am I right?
All right, you got this one.
No, I know. You want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I'm totally into that. I like it when people give me the benefit of the doubt. But I'm morally certain that the guys who remained standing, to me, it was almost like defiant. Maybe who knows what was in their hearts. It's not for me to know. It's not for me to judge. But it did give the impression of this sort of defiance. I don't care that all 2,000 of my brothers in this room are kneeling. I'm not going to kneel. I'm going to stand. And probably they didn't have that feeling in their hearts, but it did kind of come across that way. It was weird. So there's just a practical liturgical example of the division and the disunity and the disruption that faulty liturgical theology brings with it. In my view, again, I don't make such decisions. I'm just a guy with a microphone. But I have a right to say my opinion. That's my opinion. 888-914-9149. Thank you, Peter. I will be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show, including, and maybe most especially, your phone calls right after this quick timeout. Please stay right there. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show, and you are the center of attention when you give me a call, 888-914-9149. Let's start off in, let's start off in Malone, Pat, New York.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Oh, I was just going to say,
I just
saw a tweet come in. I thought it was really nice.
Okay.
Steve, I don't know if I'm supposed to say their
is
last name.
Is something
names.
About you? They
no,
like Cyrus?
No, it's not. No. Okay. No, those don't come in. So this is Steve L. I'll just call him Steve L. So Patrick, okay. I enjoy your show very much. I'm not Catholic. I'm open to the Catholic faith. You also talk about topics on what's going on in the world, and I learn so much on the Bible topics as with others, and I think he means the other shows on the station. With others who on the station who follow you. So he must mean the other Twitter followers and the discussions that happen behind the scenes.
Or, it sounds, and by the way, that is a cool note. Thank you,
yeah,
Steve.
That's really cool.
Maybe he's referring to the other hosts, the shows that follow this one. Maybe that's what he's referring to.
That's what I thought at
like
first,
maybe
but then when
the
I.
Inner Life.
Yeah, with Josh, that's such a good show. And I thought, at first, that's what I thought, but now that I'm reading this, I think he's talking about the other people who follow you. No, you're right. Okay. You're right. Never mind. You're right. As usual. Okay, cut that.
I don't know about that.
I'm going to cut that. I'm cutting that. Cut that.
Okay.
Cut that.
Well, that's kind. Thank you. Thanks for catching that, Cyrus. And thank you, Steve. I appreciate that very much. And it just goes to the point that there are a lot of non-Catholic folk who listen to Relevant Radio. And we're very grateful for that. A lot of people, including, well, you just heard we had within the last half hour a gentleman who called in. He's a regular listener, and he's a self-professed agnostic. And I thought that was really, really cool how he said that, you know, is it coincidence that his backpack tipped over at just the right moment and the rosary that his wife, Catholic wife, had put in his backpack just happened to pop out? Was that a sign from God? I'd like to think so. But yeah, we do have our fair share, and we hope to grow that share of people who are not Catholic who listen to the program. So thank you to all of you who maybe that describes. Thank you. Let's go to Nicole. And thank you, Cyrus. Let's go to Nicole in Malone, New York. Hi, Nicole. Welcome.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. I respect your opinion, your show so much. I listen to it constantly as I live alone. I wanted to ask a question or have a quick conversation on funerals. I have been to several over the last 6 months or so, mm-hmm. and I'm, okay. you know, just really know that this is a wonderful time to evangelize, and especially to those who are coming into our Catholic churches that aren't familiar with our traditions and primarily the reverence. And I was just taken aback by a funeral that I went to yesterday, to a wonderful man who has been a Catholic his whole life, a 90-year-old man who lost his son recently to COVID. And so it's just a real, you know, a real tragedy to our community. But I walked into the funeral yesterday, and this is the church that I, you know, made my confirmation in and was married in, and my parents were married in, you know. And I walked in, and I don't go to this church anymore, but that's a different conversation. But I walked in, and I literally stepped back and put my hand on my heart because I was so stunned at the party that was going on. And I was working and, you know, swung into the church to pay my respects and to have Mass quietly for the family. And I thought, oh my goodness, what is the formula to have, you know, the body in front of the altar to pay their respects? They had like the viewing in the church before Mass. And in the church that I go
with
to
an
now,
open casket?
There's no speaking. No, it was cremated. You know, so what's that format? And also, when is the eulogy supposed to happen? I've been to a funeral where the eulogy was done before the first reading. And I know, and now in retrospect and learning and understanding, that's not when it's supposed to happen. And I did it for my own father's funeral. And I just... I don't know what the rules are anymore. And, you know, then
I can help
this particular funeral, then what do you... Yeah, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have something more you wanted to say?
In this particular funeral I went to yesterday, where there were three eulogies after the Mass, so to speak. And, you know, one was brief and was appropriate. One turned into kind of a comedy type of thing and funny stories you want to hear, but not necessarily at Mass. And then another one that was very moving and really quite evangelistic and really turned into a testimony. I don't believe this person was Catholic, not that it made a difference, because he was really, really calling upon everyone to have a relationship with Christ. It was very powerful. Mm-hmm. But now we're an hour and a half into, you know, the funeral. So it just, there's no one genuflecting going up to do readings. Some of the address is inappropriate. I'm just struggling with this.
I understand. I think I can help you. So there are indeed some rubrics, to use the technical term, that the church has in place for how these, for example, a Mass of Christian Burial should be conducted. Now, I don't know if you want to spend the money to get the book called The Rites. There is an actual book you can buy, and it'll probably set you back, I don't know, $30 or something. But it is, you want volume one. And in this volume, it lays out what all the rituals are, what are the rubrics for the rituals. It includes weddings, it includes confirmations, and also the order of Christian burial, or the Mass of Christian burial. Now, it's also available online, and you can find it how would you search that? If you searched for the order of the Mass, rather, of Christian burial online, you'll find it. You'll find the rubrics spelled out. So it gets into, in fact, I just pulled it up here just as I was talking to you. So it gets into the question of the vigil the night before, the wake, the rosary, funeral masses for those who have been cremated, funeral masses for those who are going to be interred in a cemetery. The vigil, the liturgy itself, how should the liturgy be conducted? What about a funeral liturgy that's conducted outside of Mass? What about music? What about the readings? What are the appropriate scripture selections? It even gets down to things like flowers and photography, and is it appropriate to give a stipend to the priest, etc. But there is a section on eulogies, for example. And so it's all spelled out. Now, it sounds to me like what happened in the case of the one that you walked into. Unfortunately, this does happen. There are people who they just want to freelance, and they don't really care. all that much about what the church has to say on this issue, so they do it their way, as Frank Sinatra would say. That's not good. And the reason the church has these things in place is to not only make sure that things are done properly and with decorum, but also so that something goofy or weird doesn't happen. So let me read to you from kind of a condensed version of what you would find in the rites. And it says, this is regarding the eulogies. The homily at the funeral liturgy is one that focuses on the scripture readings and the themes of Christian hope and the significance of our salvation in Jesus Christ. Therefore, eulogies are not, and that word not, by the way, is emphasized. It's in bold. Eulogies are not part of the Catholic funeral liturgy. Remembrances of the deceased may be given as part of the vigil service the evening before. At the end of the funeral liturgy, a member of the family or a designated person may speak to express remarks of appreciation. Only one person may speak, and for no longer than 3 minutes. And my guess is that probably is not what happened at the funeral that you attended. So I'm sorry to say you attended a funeral that was not conducted according to the rubrics. And that's really, I'm assuming, if it was the priest who was presiding, that's where the authority is to make sure it's done right. And for whatever reason, he didn't do so. But thankfully, Nicole, that is not typical. And so more likely than not, if you were to attend a different funeral at a different parish, chances are you would see it done properly and with the right decorum.
The eulogy prior to the first reading, I saw it at a different church, which then I guess we requested, because I didn't know the first church, I didn't know who the person was. I went for the parents. I didn't know the person itself that had passed. Yeah. So it was nice because I understood who the person was and I could pray for them all through the Mass. So I guess that's why we requested it. I wish I had been told and said, sorry, that is inappropriate because of XYZ. Right. It would help educate me on my faith that I did.
And it's not only inappropriate, it's actually not permitted. It's expressly not permitted.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And but if I'm not, you're not told how, you know,
well, you didn't do anything wrong. I mean, I don't know if you're concerned about that. You didn't do anything wrong. You were just witnessing some things that were done wrong.
I guess I'm more concerned about how do we catechize and how do we evangelize through the funeral process of people coming, because our churches are fading, our attendance is fading, but they're coming to the funerals. But when you're not asked to genuflect in front of the tabernacle before you go to a reading, before you enter a pew, and what those mm-hmm. traditions are, and who's going up, and what that, you know, it's just...
Yeah, you're identifying a much wider problem here, and it is a problem, I grant you that. I talked a little while ago about a gradual, and in some cases accelerated, loss of reverence for Christ and the Holy Eucharist. And it starts at the top. And so if the people in the congregation, if the priest does not personify in his own actions reverence for the Lord, that's going to rub off on the people. If the priest does not only not personify this for himself, but also if he permits laxity and lack of reverence and respect, and he doesn't make some kind of an effort to remind the people that this is they're in the Holy of Holies. They're in the presence of Almighty God, and stop the chitter chatter and pay attention. I don't know why some priests don't do that when it's sorely needed, but for whatever reason they don't. So that being the case, you're identifying a much wider problem that exists across the board, not in every parish, but in many. But the fact is you saw it in a microcosm at this funeral. So you saw the bad fruits of this sort of laxism and lack of reverence and a lack of teaching reverence, because when they got up to go up into the sanctuary to read the readings or whatever, there were no genuflections because they don't even know any better anymore. Many of these people, they don't even know any better anymore. They've just been so conditioned by what they've seen or haven't seen, in the case of those who haven't really seen much reverence, that for them, that's normal, that's standard. And God willing, over time, that can be corrected. But I don't mean to sound defeatist, Nicole, but it is what it is, what it is. And that's what it is. So how do we fix this? Well, in the case of a funeral, that is the domain of the priest. That is his domain. He is the one who sets the tone. He is the one who says, nope, 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 we're not doing that. No eulogies. Nope, we don't do that here. If he permits it, then that's on him. And this is where seminary training is so important. So when the men are going through their 4 years of theology, especially the last 2 years of theology, which is the final phase before ordination, they're learning all these things in fine detail. And so this gets to the question of what is the effectiveness of the seminary instruction? What is the effectiveness of the man himself? Is he really learning? And for that matter, even if he learned it, does he have a wholehearted commitment to doing what the church asks of him, or is he planning to be a freelancer, which is always a bad idea? So it's a multifaceted problem. I'm really sorry that you had to experience the way you did, but I wouldn't let it rattle you, because if you were to go down the street to St. Miscellaneous Parish and Father McGillicuddy is running that funeral, chances are it's going to be done the right way. So I think what you experienced was a bit of an outlier. I hope it was. That's my hope anyway. Thank you, Nicole. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Tom in, of all places, beautiful downtown Marshfield, Wisconsin. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I am actually calling from where you are at right now. I got a crazy text last night during one of your presentations, and it's thrown me for a loop. So here's my dilemma. Large Irish Catholic family, just like you're coming from, you know, large bunch of kids. My wife and I, we're the only ones that are still practicing our faith. The dilemma is, you know, we've got a lot of people that are not talking in the family, very estranged. You know, we've got Irish Alzheimer's. We forget everything but the grudge. And we have an event coming
I've never heard it put that way.
Yeah, no, it's the truth. But we've got an event in 6 weeks where we were going to try and...
Hey, Tom, your phone's acting a little weird. It's hard for me to hear you. I hope you're not on speakerphone or Bluetooth, right?
No, I'm not. I'm not on anything. I can even turn
okay.
it on. I'm just on a cell phone. Are you still able to hear me now?
I can, but it sounded a little bit muffled. But go ahead. We'll do the best we can.
All right, maybe I'll move a little further then. Any event, we've got an event in 6 weeks where we were going to try and celebrate a birthday party for a sibling. And I was really hoping it was going to be an opportunity for some reconciliation for some estranged people. And this person is in a gay marriage. And she kind of formalized this 10 years ago. I've never really acknowledged it. I've always just kind of ignored it. And this birthday party now has been expanded to a kind of celebration of her gay marriage. And a lot of her friends are going to be invited. And it puts me in a bind, because I was really hoping this was going to be an opportunity for reconciliation with my siblings. And hopefully we could move forward, because we're all getting up to the point where I'm afraid that the next time we'll be together is when someone's getting a funeral. So the dilemma I'm faced is, if I go to this birthday, am I condoning, giving implicit, you know, acceptance to this gay marriage, because they're going to celebrate this at this birthday party, or do I stay away? And then I create further division in the family, which is tough, because we are a family that's divided, and a lot of it's on religious background and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of those difficulties. It's a difficult reality that many families go through. And that is, as Jesus said, I have come not to bring peace, but division, he said. Not for the sake of division. Obviously, the Lord wants us to be united. But what he's saying there is that the effects of standing up for what you know to be right and true, or not being willing to go along with something that you know is wrong and not true, will naturally bring about division in families. Jesus is very specific about this. He says, you know, it will set mother against daughter and mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and father against son. He gives a kind of elaboration there. So it's descriptive, not prescriptive. He's not saying this is how it should be, but this is how it will be. And you're now living through some of that. So my view of this is that, of course not. Of course you can't I mean, if you were there at this event, this party, this get together, and it turned into this sort of celebration of an immoral lifestyle in an immoral situation, well, then you haven't obviously done anything to show support for it. But I mean, you could leave, you could raise your objection and then get thrown out. I mean, a lot of things, you can happen in many different ways. But if you know that that's what's going to be ahead of time, by going to it, even if you disagree and even if your blood is boiling, if you go to it, it sends the implicit statement that you are okay with it at some level. And of course, you're not okay with it. So if your question, no. I mean, if you're asking for like, you know, what is my opinion would be, I wouldn't go. If I knew that this was going to be a celebration of something deeply immoral, I wouldn't go. And the question probably would remain for you. Do you tell them why you're not going? Now, if it were me, I would tell them I'm not going because I can't celebrate something that's objectively immoral. And I'm sorry that you all are doing that because you shouldn't be doing it either. And that probably will earn you a lot of opprobrium. But you know what? Here's the thing, Tom. If someone, let's say you got a whole family of people who are in various stages of spiritual corruption, sometimes all it takes is that one person who's willing to risk being hated on by standing up for the truth, to show some gumption, to show some backbone and courage in the face of you know, groupthink, and stand up and say no. Sometimes that's all it takes for the other ones who are not too far gone to be able to step back and say, yeah, that's right, I probably shouldn't do that either. But if nobody does that, if there isn't somebody who says, I can't do that because that's wrong, the people who are mushy and squishy and lukewarm, they don't have anybody to see as a good example. So maybe that's what God is calling you to do, as painful as it might be.
Right, right. I think that's probably what I've been guilty of for the longest time, is I've been just kind of riding the fence, kind of just being quiet about it. And now I'm kind of being confronted with it directly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, boy. Are you ever? Here's a Bible verse that you might find, you know, at least helpful. St. Paul says in Romans 16, this is beginning in verse 17, he says, I appeal to you, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and create obstacles contrary to the doctrine that you have been taught. Avoid them. For such persons do not serve our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own appetites, and by smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the hearts of the naive. So it sounds to me like here's a clear-cut case of people who are creating an obstacle, which is definitely contrary to the doctrine that you've been taught. And what does he say? He says, avoid them. As sad as that may be.
No, that's what I was thinking you were going to tell me today. And it's really important, but I think we've been talking about life, and I've been talking about this morning, but thank you for your presentation.
And I know it's a difficult situation. I my heart goes out to you. It really does.
Yeah.
So even if there's some suffering involved.
Painful, yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can imagine. Family pain is a whole different magnitude of pain, you know, it cuts deeper, it seems to me. So, but you know what, Tom, if you're in your conscience, you're doing what you know to be right, even though you're going to have to take a hit for it, that's meritorious in God's eyes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate you talking with me this morning.
Happy to, Tom. Happy to. Hope I see you again tonight at the second event that
we're doing. Okay, take care.
888-914-9149, rapidly approaching the close of the second hour. Don't worry, we have 1 hour yet to go, but that'll go quickly too. So give me a call, 888-914-9149. Just remember, no eulogies at Catholic funerals, okay? No eulogies. No eulogies. I'll be right back.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
We're back. Taking me back to the 70s, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We have, we have a line open. Grab it, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mark in Lewiston, Maine. Good morning, Mark, and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. I just had like a follow-up question to your conversation with the gentleman on the prior call about the same-sex weddings.
Okay.
I have a family member who is probably going to be that happening sometime soon, but they live on the other side of the country from me, and you know I wouldn't be able to attend whether it was same-sex, regular sex, whatever. Is it appropriate to send them a card like you would with anybody else with money? Like, you know, that's you're still acknowledging their union, or should you just ignore them? Or, you know, what's your opinion on that?
So two consenting adults, right? They're above the age of consent. Okay. Or they're at the age of consent. So two consenting adults, and it's not illegal, right?
Right. Yeah. They live in California.
What if they were brother and sister, or mother and father? I'm sorry, mother and son, or father and daughter. And let's just say in this scenario, so two consenting adults above the age of reason, above the age of consent, rather. And just to stipulate, because laws vary, but let's just assume that it was in a place where it was legal. So there's no legality issue here.
Right.
And so a mother and her son, or a father and his daughter, or two, you know, brother and sister are going to get married. Would you send a card and some money?
No, it's a moral issue, right? It's an immoral thing.
Right. So by sending a card and some money, even if you couldn't be there in person, if you send a card and some money to show support, if I read you right, you're saying you wouldn't do that because it would show support for something that you know is immoral, right?
Right. Isn't it basically the same thing as attending, you know, showing that you approve of what they're doing?
Yeah, I would regard it that way. So the reason I'm giving this kind of extreme parallel is to say that in essence, it's really the same thing. It's a different kind of thing, but it's the same thing. In other words, it's nothing to celebrate. And to send a card, whether or not there's money in it, it's irrelevant. But if you were to send a card, it's a gesture of support. And it's not that you don't support. Let's say it's your, you know, let's say it's your best friend, and he's going to get married to a man. And it's not that you don't. Or maybe it's your brother. Let's put it that way. Let's say it's your brother and he's going to get married to a man. It's not that you don't love your brother. You do love your brother, and you would do anything to help and support your brother if it's possible to do so. But this is one of those things that's not possible to do, because you can support him, but you can't support what he's doing that's destructive of his own soul. You can't. I mean, how do you celebrate that? And if you want to take it out of the heterosexual category, and let's just say it's a, you know, I'm sorry, out of the homosexual category, let's put it in the heterosexual category. Let's say it's a guy who ran out of his marriage, left his wife, abandoned her with five children. And, you know, the younger model secretary at work, he's going to go down to the courthouse and get married to her. And his poor wife is stuck now with the five kids that he's ran away from. Would you send him a card with some money? Probably not. Because what he's doing is objectively wrong. Doesn't matter whether he's homosexual or heterosexual. Now, that adds another dimension of complexity to it. But in any case, I think you can see that sending a card is sending the wrong message. It's saying, I support what you're doing. And you don't.
Yeah, correct.
Or at least I don't think you do, right?
Right, right. No, you're right. Absolutely right.
So I know it's hard, and that's the terrible thing about this is that it's so wounding when you want to support somebody. You love this person, you care about this person's welfare, but the crazy thing is that by giving a kind of a false show of support, it actually makes things worse for that person because it reinforces their delusion. It reinforces their decision to go forward with something that at some deep level they know is wrong. But if there are enough people cheering them on, it's easier to ignore your conscience.
Right. And it all goes back to, like you were telling that other gentleman, we can't be lukewarm, because what does Jesus say if we're lukewarm? You know, he'll spit us out of his mouth. So it's a situation that he's putting us in to I don't know, to test us or however you want to look at it, but we need to stand up, and more people need to stand up and show the others what the light looks like in this world, because it's sadly missing.
It is true. And it's never fun to be the guy that's got to stand up and lead the charge. But sometimes you have to be that guy.
Yep, absolutely. And we will get our just rewards in heaven.
Yeah, that's true. Well, remember this. I'll leave you with this parting gift. This is from Jesus, and this is in Luke chapter 12. I tell you, everyone who acknowledges me before men, the Son of Man will also acknowledge before the angels of God. It's in Matthew 10, he says, I will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But then he goes on to say, you know, whoever denies me before men, I will also deny before my Father who is in heaven. So this is this ultimately, in my view, is a form of denying Jesus. When you say, I'm more concerned about what my family will think of me than what God will think of me. I'm more concerned about being accepted and not being, you know, harassed by my family. That's more important to me than knowing that Jesus asks me to follow him and maybe suffer along the way. So I think about that passage. I find it helpful at times. Yeah. It helps me clarify my own thinking.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
All right. Well, hey, Mark, hang in there. Thank you. No, I do appreciate that. Difficult decisions, to be sure. Let's go now to Linda in Silver Spring, Maryland. Maryland, excuse me. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for having
me. Yeah, you're welcome.
I just have this question about, I've been hearing around the church this week or last week about something called Passion Week. And I thought, what are they talking about? They must mean Holy Week. And I asked about it, and they said, no, Holy Week, not Holy Week, Passion Week. Passion Week is the week before Holy Week. If that's the case, why would the week before Holy Week be Passion Week?
Well, it's a misnomer there. It's actually Passion Tide. So Passion Tide is the correct word for it. If you heard somebody say Passion Week, it's a misnomer. So Passion Tide is the 2 weeks before Easter. So it's the buildup to the Passion of Christ, which begins on Holy Thursday night. The Triduum begins on Holy Thursday. The Triduum means 3 days.
Yes.
And it's those, you probably know all this. Okay, so Passion Tide is that two-week period of time, and we're in that right now. So that was just somebody who used the wrong word. Passion Week, maybe more strictly speaking, would be next week, and more strictly speaking. So it that would involve from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday, but specifically Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday. Passion Tide, that's the term.
All right. Thank you for clearing that up.
Happy to help. Thank you, Linda. Christmas Tide comes to mind. Christmas Tide is a kind of a season within a season. The Christmas season begins on Christmas Day, December 25th. Well, I guess technically it begins with the vigil on Christmas Eve, but Christmas Tide lasts until January 5th. And so this is a custom, not everywhere practiced, but it's a term that is used to denote that time of, you know, what would that be, about 10 days or so. From Christmas until January the 5th, Christmastide. And we're in Passiontide right now, 2 weeks. I hope that's helpful. I'm looking at the clock. I'm guessing a man has to know his limitations. Cyrus, would I be correct if I guessed that at this moment?
You're a legend in your own mind.
Yeah. You have too much fun, Cyrus.
Not going to do it.
You could be
be prudent at this juncture.
You could be working at a retail store and never have this much fun. Not in a million years.
I have so many great buttons.
Like, I'm sorry to break it to you, Chad.
Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny.
I specifically said I don't want any misogyny on my hamburger.
Sorry.
They keep sending it to me that way.
Sorry,
send it back.
No, sorry.
Give me a different hamburger.
Game over, man.
Well, hour
Game
three.
Over.
No, we have a whole other hour. Whole other hour right after this, so stay right there.
Great Scott, Patrick! You're right!